Breaking news coming in from Bet365, where every nail-biting overtime win, breakaway, pick six, three-point shot, underdog win, buzzer beater, shootout, walk-off, and absolutely every play in between is amazing. From football to basketball and hockey to baseball, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Virginia.
And here we go. Welcome to the Expressway. We are back again, the BT Express. And Charles, show me the way here, bringing you all of the world of professional sports and college sports. We take you through four amazing quarters of New York Giants, New York Jets football, as well as the most exciting topics that we think have plagued us or we just had thoughts that kind of come to our mind over the course of the week. Our third quarter, we just take a look at anything we feel as though is a hot topic for that week. And then, as always, we leave the fourth quarter to our passion, whether it be football, baseball, basketball. We just talk about any old sport that comes to mind that is on the top of mind of people today. And for this week, it'll be basketball again. We are in the midst of the NBA Finals. One final is over. Denver is the winner, beat our Lakers, as well as the NBA Eastern Conference Finals, which Boston is looking terrible. And Miami is looking like the old Miami of old Pat Riley, Miami Heat team, where Jimmy Buckets is showing out. But first, both the Jets and the Giants started OTAs this week, and we're going to take a look at both of how the first two practices have gone for both teams. We're going to start off with the Giants, BT. I think everything is looking well. People are very optimistic, as all 32 teams are at this point in the season. But what do you like about the first 2 days of OTAs for the Giants?
See, I like that they're trying to get their passing game in order, because the coach of the Giants went out and got some star-like players for Danny Jones so he could have room for error. And he got Darren Waller, the tight end, who I think is going to be a tremendous asset to the New York Giants. They say he's looked good in the OTAs. And then a rookie wide receiver, Jalin Hyatt from the University of Tennessee. He's supposed to be a speedster. And I think speed is the thing that kills if you play wide receiver. And if you get someone to stretch the defense, it allows you to get people underneath. And if Darren Waller can do his part, keep the middle open, and Jalin can keep the sidelines open, it's going to open up things for Wandale Robinson, Sterling Shepard, and Darius Slayton. So I think they're getting the offensive line together. It's hard to tell in OTAs because you can't really hit, but I know from a skill position standpoint, they're looking better than they have in a few years.
Yeah, I'm also excited to see how obviously OTAs, no pads, so you really don't get a sense for the offensive and defensive lines. But I'm excited about seeing Andrew Thomas come into his own. I think this year he has a chance to develop into that all-pro type of lineman that'll be around for 15, 16 years. I kind of hate to say or put his name in the same breath as Orlando Pace, but I'm hoping that he becomes that type of stalwart left tackle that the Rams had for all those years. And it would provide a lot of relief, especially for Daniel Jones trying to make a difference and trying to show all of the pundits that he deserved all that money that they gave him last year, last offseason. So I'm excited for this season, and I'm hoping that they can get something worked out with Saquon Barkley. Obviously, he's not in camp because he doesn't have to be, because he's not under contract. He hasn't signed his tender yet. So I'm hoping that situation get worked out. But, you know, they got a lot of young running backs. They got the rookie running back. He gets a lot of reps. He gets a chance to really do a lot of things in the offense. And hopefully he can get used to the offense so he can be very productive and a very important piece this upcoming season, given the hard schedule that they have going forward, as we talked about last week.
Well, they opened up the first game of the season against the Cowboys, so they got to be ready. And what's going to show me is Brian Daboll, the head coach, Has he improved on his situation? Because last year he was a great teacher, teaching everybody and building things around the talent that he had. Another one I'm concerned with is Evan Neal. He'll be in the second year from the University of University of Alabama, and all their players are, you know, probably in a minor league pro where they're playing. And I think he's got great feet. He's got great potential. And usually, Charles, you notice yourself, as the guys go into their second year, is willing when their talent comes about. So I'm anxious to see what happens in that situation.
Yeah, I'm excited. You know, Schmitz just signed the last rookie to sign his contract. So all the rookies are signed. And he's bringing a lot of excitement to that offensive line. I think this is probably the first time, and you tell me, because you were around those Phil Simms teams when Doug Riesenberg and Jimbo Elliott were all around, and you had an offensive line where there was some stability within an offensive line, and that was really the core of the Giants offense when they won those two Super Bowls with Bill Parcells. Do you kind of see this offensive line taking shape the same way?
Absolutely. And one of the main reasons is the guy that just signed, Michael Smith from University of Minnesota. Was that where he's from?
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, where every nail-biting overtime win, breakaway, pick six, three-point shot, underdog win, buzzer beater, shootout, walk-off, and absolutely every play in between is amazing. From football to basketball and hockey to baseball, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Virginia.
Smith.
Iowa State.
Anyway, I got him down as a leader of the offense. And when I talk to kids, Charles, and a guy tells me he's the center, I tell him, you are the quarterback of the offense. You're supposed to run the tackles, the guards, tell them what to do, where the linebacker is, and also communicate with the quarterback. And I think this guy, John Michael Smith, is really, really going to be instrumental, because they say, even though he just in minicamp, that he's already grasped the system. And it's really hard to do unless you're studying your behind off. So I look for him to be good. I also look for the second-year tight end, Daniel Bellinger, because he's looked good in practice. And I think he's going to be a good backup. Or when the Giants go two tight ends, he's going to allow them to have that type of stuff. So, it looks really good, because if you were getting the team from the very beginning and you're the general manager, Charles Way, you know you put your offensive line in together first and then build from there. And I think that's what he's done. They did exactly what they wanted to do in the offseason. They wanted to solidify the offensive line and get Danny Jones some people that can help him out, because, you know, his excuse in the past is that he didn't have any all-pro wide receivers. He's got now all-pro tight end. It's a possibility that these young rookie guys and Darius Slayton can stay well, and Sterling Shepard and Wandale Robinson. I'm looking to see what he can do. So, you know, and there's a lot of competition at the Giants OTAs. And I think that's what you want as a coach, is to make it competitive so that people get better from week to week.
Yeah. And obviously Wandale and Sterling Shepard aren't doing too much, because both are coming off of major injuries. So it's going to take some time for them to heal up and to get back out there. I'm hoping that they'll be ready by training camp this year, so that they'll be back on the field, because those are two veteran, Sterling Shepard's veteran presence and Wandale's explosiveness. I think those are two key attributes this team really needs to handle the type of schedule that they have, especially coming out with Dallas and dealing with that defense that they have on that team. They're going to need all hands on deck, and everybody needs to be healthy. I'm just a little concerned about Wandale Robinson coming off that knee injury and how it impacts his explosion. You know as well as I do, being in a skill position and coming off of a major injury like that, it usually takes a good year and a half for someone to come back to be right again and to have that same explosiveness. So I'm kind of a little hesitant to be putting all of my eggs in Wandale Robinson's basket, but I'm hoping that he can come back to somewhat close to the player he was last year that made him such a dynamic player. Then that put, and saying that, that puts a lot more pressure on Jalin Hyatt to be the explosive guy on that offensive side of the ball and that wide receiver group, just because of the injuries that this team has had last year.
Well, see, I look at modern technology and medicine all the time because there really are no career-threatening injuries left. It used to be you mess up your knee, it takes 2 years, but now I've seen people get back in 1 year. There was a running back who played for the Minnesota Vikings, and I forgot his name, but he's got to be in the top five rushing leaders. He's from Texas or Oklahoma, I don't remember which one, but he came back in less than a year, and he worked hard on his knee, and it depends on the effort you put in. You know, because you hurt your knee before, the effort that you put into it with the Cybex machine and the technology is deeper than anything. And now, as soon as you are ready to walk, they got you out walking. I mean, they're really got a new technology. So I'm anxious to see if he recovers from that. And usually it comes down to, Charles, the effort that, you know, the trainer tells you what to do. Some of those people tell you, but you got to do stuff on your own if you really want to be good and come back strong. And I think that we're going to see his work ethic to see if he does come back strong.
Yeah, no, I'm like I said, I'm excited to see. That's one of the most exciting position battles come training camp that everybody should want to see. Just because Jalin Hyatt, based on his highlight tape from college, this dude is explosive and is that big playmaker that really makes is like a playmaking difference on the football field. And they I think that's what they lack. Is a guy that can take the top off the field. And I don't think the Giants have had one since Amani and Plex, or not even Amani and Plex, but Mario Manningham was probably the last guy that you can consider a speed burner. I don't know if Mario was that big of a speed burner, right? And so when you look at the wide receiving corps, that battle is one to look at, and I'm excited about. The other side of the ball, it's really about Okereke. How can Okereke make a difference, especially in the passing game on the defense? And realize, I didn't know they were this bad, but in the run game, the Giants defense was 27th out of 32 teams in the run game this year. So that, I don't know if Okereke is going to solve those problems. It's really going to come down to Leonard Williams and Dexter Lawrence solving those problems, and they got to hold up. Dexter Lawrence got a hefty contract this offseason. So he's got a lot to prove, and hopefully he'll earn every penny of it, because they need to improve on that run game, on that run defense rating.
Well, what I really like, though, is Kevin Theobald, the number one draft choice last year.
Yeah,
he has a fresh start this year, because I think he missed first four or five games because of his knee. And I think, you know, if he comes back strong and he's had a good workout, again, he's going into his second year. If he can be even better as a pass rusher, he's going to help the secondary tremendously. And with the number one draft choice, Deontay Banks from University of Maryland, I think he's going to be a shutdown co-corner. He likes to play tough on the wide receivers. And he won't have to cover very long if you got somebody putting pressure on the passer. But two things that I think of you say the Giants were 27th. Number one, the teams had to pass the ball to beat them. And sometimes late in the game, you know, you only run the ball when you got a lead. But I don't know if they still do that this day and age, because they're going to pass the ball anytime. I've seen coaches get ridiculous. And when they have a lead, they don't run the clock like they used to by running the ball. But see, I got an optimistic attitude in the defense because of them being a year into Wink's system. And I think that if the offense can control the ball longer than they did last year, have some nice drives that go 80 yards and say 17 plays, that gives the defense a chance to come in well rested. So if that happens, I'm really scared of the Giants. My only problem is Las Vegas, because they don't believe in the Giants. And usually they're right about what they say, but I don't see how you can be right this early. And last year, the Giants, they fooled everybody. So this year, I don't think they're going to be able to do that.
Yeah, 8.5 is the over-under. That doesn't get you – I don't think that gets you in the playoffs. I think you're going to need at least 10 yep. wins, if not 11 wins, to get into the playoffs this year. And so that's something that I'm concerned about. As we said last week, the first half of the schedule is like murderer's row for anybody, just because they're playing all of the elite teams. The first 2 weeks right out the gate, if you don't win, you're 0-2. You could potentially be 0-2 going into week three and hoping that you get a breather with the Rams coming into town, right? And so that's tough. You're opening up on the road 2 weeks in a row, which we talked about last week. So this isn't an easy schedule. Everybody's going to earn their money. Dabo is going to earn his money. Daniel Jones is going to earn his money. And Dexter Lawrence is going to earn his money. And if Saquon signs that new contract, he'll definitely have to earn his money.
What do you think about Saquon holding out like he is? Because I think he's trying to make a statement, because he wants to get, what I hear, he wants to get a McCaffrey money, which is 15 or 16 million a year. I think the most the Giants offered was 12 or 13. And I think he's worth it, because I know we talked about him getting hurt and stuff, but he has worked hard to come back. For him to get 1,300 yards after knee surgery, you've got to be in it. So I'm hoping that he comes back soon, because his presence is and his character really help other players on the team, Charles Way. And I think that the Giants need to satisfy him, and don't bring him here that he's mad.
Yeah, I think so. I think there's a fine line. I don't know if he'll get McCaffrey money, just because I don't think any running back moving forward will get McCaffrey money. I think the Zeke Elliott situation kind of hurt all running backs making the type of money that McCaffrey is making, $16 million, just because you're going to have to be special. You're going to have to show that you can stay healthy throughout an entire year for multiple seasons and show them that you are a difference maker on that football field, and they cannot win without you. Right now, McCaffrey is a difference maker. He was a difference maker for Carolina when he was on the field. I don't see the same thing. As much as I love Saquon, I just think they're in two different categories, because
breaking news coming in from Bet365, where every nail-biting overtime win, breakaway, pick six, three-point shot, underdog win, buzzer beater, shootout, walk-off, and absolutely every play in between is amazing. From football to basketball and hockey to baseball, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER, 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Virginia.
You see, McCaffrey is the type of guy, is a smaller version of Saquon. And coming out of college, I thought Saquon should be doing everything that McCaffrey is doing. But it just seems like McCaffrey is just a more explosive player in the receiving game and in the running game.
You're listening to The Expressway with Billy Taylor and Charles Way. We're on each and every week on the NFL AlumniMedia.com. We come back. We're going into our second quarter. We'll talk a little bit more about the Jets. So don't move a muscle. We'll be right back with more after these messages.
Welcome back to the Expressway. I'm your co-host, Charles Show Me the Way. I'm here with the BT Express, Billy Taylor. We just got finished talking about New York Giant OTAs and all the goings happening at the Giants camp. I just want to ask you, BT, I left off with Saquon and the McCaffrey comparison. Do you agree? Do you agree? I mean, on the field, on tape, don't go with your Giants heart, your bleeding blue heart, but on tape, and look, I'm a hater just as much as the next best hater, right? But on tape, McCaffrey, man, is legit. And every time, I mean, if he was a video game, I'm using him every play until he breaks. You tell me, do you agree?
No, I like him, and I like his dad. His dad played with the Giants a long time ago, Ed McCaffrey. And I like his son. He came out of Stanford. What I think he has on Saquon is ability to run routes. He's probably one of the best running back route runners that I've seen in a long time. And it gives the quarterback so much more room for error because he's got great hands. His acceleration after he gets to the ball is incredible. It really is. But see, I think Saquon, it may be faster than him. I mean, last year he was kind of doing what my dad called dilly-dallying in the hole. In the beginning of the year, that means you're not taking what the defense gives. With a running back, and I talk about it a lot, you got to have different speeds. You got to be able to shift. You got to take it down. And then you got to know when to turn it on. And I think as the season wore on, and maybe because of Saquon was injured early, he began to do that. He began to take what they gave him. He exploded through holes. He broke tackles. And I'm looking for that to happen this year. And I think that's probably why he's mad and holding out, because he got better as the season went on. I think they kind of messed up one time when they gave him the ball 35 times, because the next day he probably wasn't there at all because he had taken a beating. And I think the Giants had to be careful about that, because if you got a nice car, you got to take care of that nice car. So I agree with it a little bit, but I still think that as far as running the ball, they're pretty equal. I like Saquon because he shows explosion. And you know, when you're up here in the press box, Charles, and you can see that explosion, you know that's a running back.
But it's. I know we got to talk about the Jets, but I'm talking about McCaffrey shows that quickness in the hole, and every time he gets the ball, he makes something happen. And it's like, you can't touch this. Nobody can touch this little guy. It's like Marshall Faulk. Like all over again. It's like the man, every time you, and that's a great comparison, is like Marshall Faulk, because he was good at everything. He was good in the pass game. And every time he touched the ball, you thought something big was going to happen. And I think that's what you see in McCaffrey. And I just don't see that out of Saquon, but we can get into that. We got it. Our third quarter, I got something for you. We're going to talk about Jim Brown because he passed away this past weekend, but this past week. But I got a question. I want you, let's rank the best of all time. Since Jim Brown was one of the best running backs of all time, and arguably the best running back of all time, I want to see your top five of all time running backs. And Bronco Nagurski can't be one. That's my guy.
Well, when we get to the third quarter, we're going to talk about that. But as far as the Jets are concerned, they were talking about Aaron Rodgers having a calf injury. But I don't think it's bad to have the injury at this time of the year, because he really doesn't have to do much, because he's just learning the offense, learning his players. And I give him some ID, Charles, because he's at the OTAs. He's at every practice. He could go home because he's a veteran, but I think he's trying to make sure that everybody realizes he's a team player, and he got kind of a bad rap in Green Bay. He's showing a different thought of it while he's in New York.
You know, I'm excited. You know, I'm a Jets hater all day, every day, right? But I'm literally excited to see what's going on with the Jets, right? I'm going to be an undercover Jets fan this year just because of the whole Aaron Rodgers story. And if you listen to what's going on at Jets camp, he's already having a positive effect on Garrett Wilson. And he said Garrett Wilson is walking around practice like what happened last year never happened. He has a lot more confidence. And I think the pressure is off of Garrett Wilson, saying that, hey, I got this Hall of Famer next to me taking all the pressure, and I got a chance to learn how to become a potential Hall of Famer just by being in the same meeting room with him. And I should be able to take on a lot of the knowledge and wisdom that he can bestow upon me and what he sees in the game. And so I think having Aaron Rodgers not only helps the Jets this year, but could potentially help the Jets down the line, because I think just by being around a Hall of Famer like Aaron Rodgers, Garrett Wilson will not only improve, but have that type of improvement that the Jets hope that he was when they picked him.
Well, see, I think that, and I'm from the old school on this, and it's almost like Mahomes at Kansas City. He sat out a whole year and just watched what the quarterback does. I think Zach Wilson is going to get tremendous understudy work from Aaron Rodgers. And if he can do that and sit and learn and really work hard at his craft and learn, he could get better because he's got a lot of intangibles. He doesn't really know how to handle the media well, but I think he can learn from Aaron Rodgers how to do it. But I think with the addition of Randall Cobb coming over from Green Bay, with the knowledge that he and Aaron play well together, and if Garrett Wilson, they get on the same page and not you know, differentiate between the zone and man and figure that out real quickly, I think it's really going to be fun. Even if you're not a Jets fan, but I am, Charles, I want them to do well, except when they play against the Giants, because it helps all of New York if we get at least a team in there. And the Jets, people are talking about deep into the playoffs. I don't want to talk that S word, but I think that they've got the talent to do so because, again, it's going to help their defense by having long drives, and they get that great running back, Breece Hall, back along with Michael Carter. I mean, the Jets are going to be formidable.
Yeah, no, even Coach Sala said it today. They're one of the few teams in the AFC that is penciled in to be a contender for the AFC championship game. And that's exciting in itself. There is a lot of buzz. You just don't understand. Even Las Vegas is saying that the over-under for them is 9.5 games. And so that puts them darn near right in the conversation for a playoff spot this upcoming season. So the excitement is there. Everyone is just craving the season. And it's exciting to see the Jets fans, the crazy Jets fans, go out there and act a fool again, because I guarantee you they come out winning like gangbusters. This town is going to be crazy. And don't let the Giants and Jets go into their Jets-Giants game, both with great records, both probably 1-2 in their division. That would be an exciting time for New York.
That's crazy, because I never ever thought about that. And, you know, like they talk about the New York Yankees and Mets playing the World Series, I don't know how many, 10 years ago or something like that. I've never thought of the Jets and the Giants being in the Super Bowl, but, you know, and maybe I'm thinking prematurely, but with a few breaks here or there, it's a possibility. And I think that would be ridiculous for this town to have those two. But what I also wanted to ask you, Charles, and so you're a little closer to the NFL than a lot of people, is one of the rules that it threw out was the NFL bringing in a third quarterback because of the situation that happened in San Francisco last year with McCaffrey having to play quarterback, didn't throw the ball, and they lost the game because of that. And so I thought the NFL should have did that a long time ago. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I don't know why they did away with it. It really didn't impact the roster at all. And it allowed for us to keep the quality of game as good as it is currently, because just you can see why they instituted the emergency quarterback years ago because of what happened in the San Francisco Eagles game. They couldn't play. They really couldn't play anymore. And having McCaffrey play emergency quarterback and having a guy that couldn't raise his arm back there probably could injure himself even more. It was just ridiculous. And I got to commend the NFL and the owners for making that change, because without it, the game that we love so much and the product that we always demand be great wasn't great in the biggest game of an NFL season. So I'm happy about that. The other rule change that a lot of people are talking about is the fair catch. They're going to the college rule fair catch, where as long as you fair catch the ball on the field inside the 20, they'll automatically move it out to the 25, and that's a safety issue. And as a kickoff guy myself, as a wedge buster, even though there aren't any more wedges, they should have instituted that thing a long time ago, because my head still hurts to this day because of that.
Well, what's interesting for me is that, you know, I think they're eventually trying to, you know, they're trying to keep people healthy, I understand, but are they trying to get rid of the kickoff returns? Because that's when they said most of the concussions happen. That's when a lot of injuries happen. So they're trying to figure that out. I don't know if they never do it, because if you think about it, that's one of the most exciting plays in the NFL. If you are at a game as a fan, you're standing up because of the opening kickoff to see what happens. So I just hope they don't take it away. They can try to, you know, fix things here or there, which the NFL has done a fantastic job over the last 20 years of making the quarterback not get killed, not allowing receivers coming across the middle to get blown up. And I think the NFL right now is cooking as well of food as they've ever cooked in the history of the game. And they've made it better because you're not seeing people get knocked out like you used to. I remember Jack Tatum when I was in college. He was playing with the Raiders. He knocked out Daryl Stingley and paralyzed him. That stuff should never happen. And I think that's what's going on now.
Yeah. And what do you think finally, before we wrap up this second quarter, what do you think about the flex Thursday night games? Ooh, that money, that almighty dollar is ruling the day again. What is up with that?
Well, what I thought about it a lot, Charles, and that's a good question. But see, they're not thinking about the fans that come to the game. They're only thinking about the fans who are watching on TV. Because say you have a ticket for Sunday night's game, and because your team is doing well, they switch you to the highlight, which is a Thursday night game. The fans may not be able to make that adjustment. They may not be able to take off that day, or the kid may be in school or something. So the thing about it is, and I don't think they're caring about the fans who are season ticket holders or who come to the game, because I just don't think that, you know, if they have to change it, that's a tough situation, because now that the schedule is out, this is when people make their plans. So I don't know about that. We'll have to see down the line, but I know we're going to have some situations where controversy is going to come up.
Yeah, I guess airlines are definitely going to make a little extra money in hotel room because now you have to buy that emergency fare just in case you have to change your flight so you can get your money back. So I think that's the difficult part in all of this. You're listening to the Expressway with the BT Express, Billy Taylor, and Charles Show Me the Way. We've just taken you to two quarters of amazing Giants and Jets OTA update, as well as informing you on the updated rule changes. We are coming right back to talk about our top five running backs of all time. We'll be right back in a moment. And welcome back to the Expressway. We just reached halftime of this Expressway show where we take you down the road to the Giants and Jets OTAs, as well as our most exciting topics in the world today. Today, in our third quarter, we will be talking about our top five running backs of all time in memory of the great Jim Brown, who passed away last week. I got to tell you a story. I got a chance to actually listen to Jim Brown at the Hall of Fame when we took them there for one of our rookie classes. They did it like a seminar where you get a chance to listen to a Hall of Famer. So they would bring a Hall of Famer in to the auditorium, and it's just the rookie class. It was a couple of teams in there, and we had a chance to listen to Jim Brown tell some great stories. And this is a story you told me that he told us.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $200 in bonus bets when they bet $5. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $200 in bonus bets. And see why. It's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Virginia. Terms and conditions apply.
About how he actually, so I guess the question was, how did it actually go down that you retired from the NFL? And he talked about, he was in Europe filming the Dirty Dozen, and that was the first time he had ever experienced the world of Hollywood, and all of those great actors were with him. And obviously, back in the day, it was a little bit more freedom, no cell phones, and people could get away with doing some crazy stuff. And so Jim Brown said that I was just having so much fun. And when the Cleveland Brown coach called me to say, if you don't come back over here, you don't come back. He was like, well, I'm not coming back, because he said, I'm having too much fun and I'm not leaving this this situation. And so that was a story. It was so funny the way he said it. And that was one of my most memorable moments of meeting Jim Brown. I've met Jim Brown on a number of occasions. He's been at a lot of the same places that I have had the opportunity to go to, but he was big when I saw him maybe 30 years after he played the game. God, I don't know. I would be scared to tackle him. That's like Christian Okoye and Brandon Jacobs on steroids. And I don't know if I would have been able to tackle that man, because that dude was an assuming figure in his old age when I met him.
And what's incredible for me is that my mom's brother owned a barbershop in Cleveland. And every time I went to visit him, he had all kinds of pictures of Jim Brown on the wall. And I never got to see Jim Brown play, but then when I went to high school, I started doing the research on him and saw film on him. He had some of the quickest feet I've ever seen a running back have. And he never got caught from behind. Mm-hmm. And what I liked about him is that he got up real slowly all the time, like he was dead. But then he'd come back and zoom the ball again. And another thing that got me, when I saw, there was this great linebacker. Well, I don't know if he was great, but his name was Sam Huff. He played during those times and ended up with Washington. He does the Washington Redskins broadcast. He was always hitting Jim Brown late, but they wouldn't call it. Jim Brown be on the ground, getting ready to get up, and here comes Sam Huff hitting him again. And then Sam Huff would jump on the pile like he made the tackle. Yeah. And I thought that was terrible, because I thought Sam Huff, in my mind, just watching the film, was one of the worst linebackers I'd ever seen. Because if I was Jim Brown, I'd have figured a way to beat him up. And the other thing is this. This man paid 9 years and led the NFL all 9 years, was the highest paid player in the NFL. And I think he said something like, when he filmed the Dirty Dozen, he made more money in that year than he did in 2 years with the Browns. And so that's why I think his decision was easier not to come back to the Browns. But it shows you the power of the owners, because for him to say that to your greatest player, you gotta be crazy, because it wouldn't have hurt the team or Jim Brown for him to come in a couple weeks late. Because back then I read training camp was 6 weeks long and playing six games or four games. I'm glad they changed that. But I have a lot of respect for Jim Brown as a running back.
Yeah. And when you look and when you look at all of the running backs through the history of the game, I think it's really hard to just pick your top five, because you're in different eras. And do you give more credence to Jim Brown's era because there were a lot less restrictions on what defensive players would do? As you just noted, Jim Brown was getting cheap shot at every chance the defense could get. Or do you look at the quickness and the speed of today's game, the maturation of the strength and conditioning program? Do you have to delineate your top five based on eras, or is there a top five that you would pick that could play in any era?
I think it's the top five that you could pick to play in any era. And because Jim Brown played lacrosse at Syracuse, I think that enabled him to be in outstanding condition. Every time he came to training camp, his body fat was low. He was always ready to go. And once he got in the open field, he was hard to catch. I seen him do so many moves. It was incredible. You wouldn't think somebody that big would have so many moves. But and as I look at the running backs of all time, you know, one of my favorite ones, and I even hate to say it, was O.J. Simpson. I mean, he was a speedster. He ran like a 9-200. He ran on the USC relay team, and he very rarely got caught from behind. He's the first one to get 2,000 yards in the season up in Buffalo. And so I think he's one of my top five. Give me one of yours so far.
What about Barry Sanders?
Definitely, definitely. But one thing quick, his dad said to him, he didn't want him to break Jim Brown's records. So after 10 seasons, Barry retired. And I thought that Barry would have been the all-time leading rusher in the NFL. The only problem I had is that he would lose yardage sometime because of his quickness and go backwards. But once he went forward, I don't guarantee if you was playing defensive back, CW, it'd be hard for you to tackle him.
Yeah, and so my question is, Walter Payton, Barry Sanders, Jim Brown, can anybody in your list dethrone those guys?
Maybe Eric Dickerson. Eric Dickerson, he got 2,000 yards in one season. He had 1,800 yards one time. He got mad at the Rams because they wouldn't give him $1 million a year. but he's a speedster. I remember him. There's a defensive back on the Jets named Bobby Jackson, who runs a 4.340 along with Wesley Walker. Eric Dickerson got an open field, went 85 against the Jets, and Bobby Jackson was just trying to chase him for 50 yards. So, you know, some players, when they get on the field, they are faster in a uniform than they are in regular street clothes.
I know, but he ran straight up, never liked to get hit. Wore every pad known to man.
But he's living today.
I know. And, it's just, I like Eric. Eric was, you can't take away the stats. The dude was legit.
Yes.
Earl Camp. Look at Earl Campbell.
Yep.
How fit, there was a physicalness. Like Marcus Allen, I'll put Eric Dickerson, Marcus Allen category, right? Like that. They both had like finesse games and they were both long and lanky type of players, but Earl Campbell, Walter Payton, Jim Brown, they were like physical presences in the game.
Well, see, I played 4 years at Texas Tech when Earl Campbell was at University of Texas. So we got together every year. One of the toughest running backs I've ever seen in my life. But the bad thing is that today he can barely walk because he picks up a whooping, but he gave out a lot of punishment also. But the thing I wanted to say also is Walter Payton. Walter Payton, I watched him he went to Jackson State because my dad went to Alcorn A&M and they would play Jackson State every year at Thanksgiving. And they had Walter Payton wore a white helmet on the team when everybody's in different color. So you would notice him. He was great at giving somebody a lick. He wasn't very big, Charles. He might have been 5'11 and 205.
Right.
But he was one of the toughest running backs in the history of running backs. And I really liked him because he had great character and he was a good person. And I think he's amongst the top 10 all time of running backs.
Yeah, and see, I put like Travis Henry in that category because of what he's been doing.
Yep.
I don't see too many of today's running backs of the ilk of the Jim Browns, the Earl Campbells. I think Travis Henry is the only one that probably touches their air in today's game.
Well, see, that's why I think the running back is devalued now. Because look at all the ones you talked about. And even Saquon with 1,300 yards helped the Giants to get to the playoffs last year. What about Emmitt Smith? I never liked him, and maybe because he was a Cowboy. But I remember one time it was playing the Giants, and he broke out, and Mark Collins was trying to catch him, and he waved back to Mark Collins and come on, get them. And I thought that was so unclassy of a running back because, you know, Charles, I didn't even ask you this before, but your dad and mom had to say, act like you've been there before.
Right.
My dad would say, hand the ball to the referee. You don't have to do no dances. And I never did. I flipped the ball to the referee. And I just thought that Emmitt Smith made me mad enough. And I didn't think he was as great as he was. It's just that he had probably one of the best offensive lines in football.
Yeah, and that bows the question. So the one guy that should have been the greatest of all time and was derailed is Bo Jackson. I think he could have probably been the Jim Brown of that era because, man, Bo, he could do everything. And if he decided to ever play football for a full season, that dude could have probably had 3,000 yards because I don't think anybody could have stopped him. He combined power and speed like no other.
There was a running back from the University of Oklahoma named Brian Bosworth. And he's always talking about he was a great speedster at 4.5. I remember the first time Bo Jackson got the ball, Boswell had the angle and Bo Jackson hit the sideline and Boswell didn't even touch him and ran straight into the end zone. And I like that kind of stuff because remember I talked about acceleration of a running back, especially where you're in the stands and you see that. But I played with Marcus Allen for a year and a half and I thought he was one of the greats of all time because, as a matter of fact, I thought I could beat him out. I was in my fifth year, and I thought I knew the game well enough, but he ran pass patterns outstanding, and he knew the holes where, you know, sometimes a running back just kind of eases up until you find the hole, then you accelerate, and that's what he did, and I think that he was most valuable player of one of the Super Bowls, and I think he's in the top 10 also, especially for longevity and everything.
Yeah, no, it's just hard. You can go down the list as to, you know, Edgerrin James, You got Sean Alexander. You got Frank Gore. Guys who had consistency, had great games. But do you put those guys – I mean, and they've done well. They had great careers. But do you – and look at Terrell Davis, right? But do you put them in the same category of the guys we just talked about?
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $200 in bonus bets when they bet $5. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $200 in bonus bets and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Virginia. Terms and conditions apply.
Well, I don't put anybody in Jim Brown's category because I think he was one of a kind because of his athleticism and his quick feet. Earl Campbell was just a mean son of a gun who would look up people to run over. Walter Payton, he was just, you know, I think he's great. Barry Sanders, I think, could have been the greatest of everybody if he hadn't retired early, because the year before he retired, he had 1,500 yards. And that was his pro thing every year, was getting 1,500. So it's a tough one situation. The only thing I think is, like I said, I'm prejudiced against Emmitt Smith because he played with the Cowboys and because he had that great offensive line. If he had the offensive line that Walter Payton had or Barry Sanders had, he would never be in the position he is today.
Yeah, no, I think that's what everybody, that's the knock on Emmitt, because Emmitt was around during the Barry Sanders era, right?
Yep.
And everybody will used to kill Emmitt because Emmitt got what he got because of his offensive line, and Barry got what he got because of his ability, right? Because Detroit never had a good offensive line. So Emmitt had always been killed because of that. His offensive line was way better. And they had a stud offensive line. I think every offensive lineman is in the Hall of Fame from that from that era. So he had it coming. What about today's running backs? Is there anybody? Because now the Hall of Famers that we're talking about had at least a nine, 10 year career. Running backs now, I don't care how great you are, you're not going past 7-8.
Well, Travis Henry is getting up there, but right. He still, you know, runs, has the same speed, takes care of himself. Once he gets through the hole, it's hard to catch him. And I think he's up there as a leader. You know, it's not many, because we talk about McCaffrey and Saquon Barkley, and they say a lot of people think Barkley's in the top three or four for the whole NFL right now. I'm not saying in history, but in the NFL right now, if he continues to improve, he's going to pile up some statistics that gives him a chance. So he's only going into his fifth year. Is that correct?
Yeah.
But anyway, you're listening to The Expressway. We call it NFLAlumniMedia.com. Billy Taylor and Charles Way. We're here each and every week talking in the world of sports. We've just gone through three quarters. We're going back with our fourth quarter talking NBA action. Keep it where it is. We'll be right back with more after these messages.
And welcome back to The Expressway. This is Charles Show Me The Way, and Beat the BT Express, Billy Taylor here, bring you all the sports action in the world of sports today. We just got through three quarters of talking about Jets, Giants, OTAs, as well as our top five running backs of all time in memory of the great Jim Brown. Now we're taking our fourth quarter, where we're going to talk about the NBA playoffs. And these games are terrible, BT. the NBA aren't getting too many ratings for these conference finals. You got a 4-0 sweep with the Denver and Lakers, and everybody's upset that they were spending so much time on LeBron, and everybody's now saying, why y'all getting on LeBron, and he's the greatest of all time, and people are arguing that LeBron ain't the greatest of all time. Michael Jordan would have never, this would have never have happened to Michael Jordan. And so you're getting that debate. Then on the Eastern Conference side, you got Boston and Miami. Everybody's thinking Boston will sweep Miami, and playoff Jimmy Buckets said, hold on, wait a second, and just really just took their lunch money, and now they're up 3-1. It's like he's a bully on the basketball court. And so when you look at the two conference finals, they're lackluster. They're not exciting. I'm hoping that the NBA finals are a little bit more exciting. It looks right now it'll be Denver versus Miami. But Boston still has life. They just won Tuesday night. And so it's a 3-1 series. They're going back to Boston. They got a chance to win that game. And Miami has to put them away. They got two games to put them away, because if they go to 7, I think Boston will take it in 7. So despite all the heroics that playoff Jimmy has done and got Miami out to a great lead, and everybody's performing well above their ability, I think that if they don't put them away in these next two games, Boston may actually make it to the finals.
What's incredible is Miami has had 9 players on their team that did not get drafted. And that's incredible. That shows you the great coach that they have at the Miami squad. But Boston, they did win the other night, and I thought that they were not going to, because I thought it was going to be a sweep. I don't really love Miami, but they play hard, and you got to give them credit for that. Anytime you watch a sporting event and someone gives all their effort, and that's why New York is such a great place for basketball, because they appreciate effort. And I think that the Miami, you know, they every loose ball they get offensive rebounds and put them back, and they make you have to beat them. So I'm still anxious to see what happens if they go up against Denver. Denver, I'm impressed as heck with Denver, because Nokovic, the center for them, Joker, they call him, is probably incredibly not a great gifted guy, but I think he's one of the best centers in the game right now.
Yeah, I think Denver has surrounded him with a great supporting cast. Yep. You watch the way they play. They move around Jokic, and the way that it's disciplined approach, where they're cutting when a double team is coming, they're cutting, and he's able to find the open guy, slasher, going to the easy layups, getting easy layups, getting wide open jump shots, and they're making them. I think the difference you look at, and people, this recently, people were complaining that because the Sixers went out early, people were saying now that should have Embiid won the MVP. But if you look at both of them, Jokic has talent around him. Jamal Murray is playing at an unbelievable level, whereas the sidekick for Joel Embiid is your boy James Harden, who kind of disappears in all playoff games or meaningful playoff games. And so when you look at the two teams, I think the difference is that Jokic has superior talent surrounding him, and the guys that he has surrounding him, when they're asked to make a play, they make a play.
Well, Murray, their point guard, he hurt his knee back when they were in the bubble, and that prevented them from going further, and he was out. You know, the thing about the NBA is they wait till their people are back 100%. They don't bring him back like 80% like the NFL does. But I think Murray has done an outstanding job of keeping, you know, of making the three-point shot, taking care of the ball. And I agree that Denver has more talent around Jokic than anybody could ever do. And that's why they got to be the favorite, because this is the first time ever, I think, that Denver Nuggets have been this far in the playoffs.
And think about it. They have a lot of length, too. They got Aaron Gordon. They got Michael Porter Jr. And, yep. And I mean, Aaron Gordon isn't a three-point threat, but Jamal Murray, they got Will Barton over there. Their whole team surrounding Jokic are three-pointers. And then Aaron Gordon is just a human highlight tape. He can still jump. He won the slam dunk title.
Yep.
And so that gives them a lob threat, someone that can go in the dunker spot to make plays and to play off of Jokic. And so the complementary pieces that they have around Jokic makes them almost a shoe-in to win the NBA title this year, just because of the ability and the supporting cast. Because I think Boston may be able to give them a run for their money, at least make it a series. I still think Denver wins. If Miami plays, I think toughness goes only so far. I think Denver has played the disciplined game. They know how to play around Jokic, and they're doing an amazing job doing it. They space the floor appropriately and do the right thing. So I think things are moving along pretty well.
And they're well coached, too. I mean, you could tell the adjustments that the coach makes, because even the last game when they beat the Lakers to win that sweep, they were down 15 at the half. Then they came back on a 25 run and got up by five in the third quarter. And the Lakers couldn't do anything. I was kind of surprised that Anthony Davis really lost the battle with him and Jokic, because, you know, I think Jokic could hit from outside, hit the three-pointer, take it to the hole as a – he's almost like a point guard center. And I think in this day and age in the NBA, that's the new people that we're looking at, seven-footers who shoot outside. Even the number one draft choice who went to the San Antonio Spurs, which my dad used to have season tickets for, he's going to play for Popovich. I think they're going to be great, because this guy is 7'5", can handle the ball, can shoot outside. Only thing is that he needs to put a few pounds on because he looks too skinny.
Yeah, I would hate to see him, because you know they're going to bully ball him to death.
Yep.
And he's going to be like that kid that got hurt, unfortunately, that went to Gonzaga, that's with Oklahoma City. I forget his name. The tall center guy, slanky, but can shoot the three, lights out, do all the other stuff. But don't get him down low in the box, or you can forget it. it's like playing with tissue paper over there. But I think Wemby, they call him, at that dude from that went to that's probably going to San Antonio in this year's upcoming draft. I think the guy has immense talent. I think he'll take the NBA to the next level. Obviously, LeBron has maybe one or two more years left. And speaking of LeBron, what do you think about all the criticism he's getting because of the performance of the Lakers in that series against Denver?
Well, see, the thing that I love LeBron. I think he's a great player, and he's been great for a long time. To be around 20 years is incredible. But I think he's a little bit off because he misses free throws at the wrong time. And his alley-oop is the first time I ever seen him miss an alley-oop. As long as I've been watching him probably since he was a junior in high school. And that's why I think that his game has gone down, but he's made adjustments in his game and the feed. Cause he missed so many three-pointers during the game. Even one game against Denver, they came back and he tries to go for a three-pointer and misses. And then the game is over. I thought he shouldn't even try it, because if you're not hitting your shots, maybe someone else can. And that's why I think his outside shot has suffered. He had 40 points the last game. And I think that kind of he had to get mad at his teammates, because a lot of them didn't do anything to help him. And even AD played well in that double figures rebound, but I don't think offensively did he help anything to help LeBron.
Yeah, I think just because he's on the biggest stage, being in LA, the microscope is on him. Because when you look at Michael Jordan's last few years in the game, I mean, they were non-existent with the Wizards. It was like, Michael, will you just please retire? What are you trying to do? Right. You don't need this, right? Go play pickup if you really want to play basketball, go play pickup in the park somewhere, because he wasn't the same guy. And even though LeBron isn't the same guy he was when he first came into the league or won all his last title, I think if you compare Michael Jordan's career to LeBron's career, LeBron took LA, who had no team, to the playoffs. And won the playing game. So I think you got to give him credit for that.
No, you're right. I do give him credit. I'm being hard on him because I've seen him almost being one of the greatest of all time. I think he's below Jordan. The thing that blew me about Michael Jordan, I saw a movie the other day, and I don't remember the name of it. It was about Michael Jordan, where his mother came in and negotiated a contract for Nike that he gets a piece of every shoe that they buy. And I think that he's been over $200 million from the Nike for Phil Knight, and that's how he bought the Charlotte Hornets. And I think that, you know, anybody who does that kind of stuff, that's probably why he held on with Washington for a while, because he knew that Nike had to be paying him.
Hey, Jumpman is everywhere. He's getting paid for every time that logo goes on anything. Yes. A dollar goes into his pocket.
Oh, my goodness. NBA action is fantastic, you know.
That's right.
But the thing about it, the finals don't start until June 1st.
June 1st.
That's like 8 days from now. That's a long time because we kind of forget about stuff, you know?
That's right. I think you're going to forget about the two teams that are in the playoffs based on who they are. It's not going to be, I think, from the NBA standpoint, the ratings are going to be very low because you got Denver, which is not in a major market, yep. And you got potentially Miami, which really isn't a major market for basketball either. And so you got two non-major market teams playing in the NBA Finals, which everybody already thinks that Denver is going to run away with it. The ratings may be terrible for this.
Well, I hope not, because after football season, it's tough for me to watch all the baseball games because hopefully, you know, they sped the game up, but it's still tough to watch all nine innings.
Yeah.
Anyway, you've been listening to The Expressway with Billy Taylor and Charles Way. We call it The Expressway because Charles is the one who came up with that. I'm the BT Express. He's Charles Show Me The Way. So we call it The Expressway from the NFLAlumniMedia.com. Got to thank Ben back at the studios for always taking care of us, making us sound good. And for Charles Show Me The Way, I'm Billy Taylor. Ladies and gentlemen, have a good day.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, where every nail-biting overtime win, breakaway, pick six, three-point shot, underdog win, buzzer beater, shootout, walk-off, and absolutely every play in between is amazing. From football to basketball and hockey to baseball, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Virginia.